Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Hey, everyone. Mike Bloom here with the panel about to break down the second episode of Top Chef Colorado. Let me just brunoise some shallots really quick. Pass it off to Haley Strong. Haley, how are those mushrooms coming along?
They're tiny for my big hands, but I'm just making it through.
All right. Well, we appreciate any sort of mushroom fingering you're taking care of. And of course, we're just slamming it down to Kurt Clark at the end, butchering the meat. Kurt knows his way around meat. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm giving Sue, I guess, clean and portion these. So I got the giving him a good scrubbing, really cleaning this meat.
You know how to portion, much like Bruce does. So, yeah, second episode of Top Chef. We've got our now requisite mise en place relay for the quickfire elimination. All about the cheesiness, quite literally. And unfortunately, Claudette becomes the second person eliminated from the competition outright, though, of course, she enters Last Chance Kitchen, which we'll definitely talk about after the episode proper. We also have a really interesting experience that I got to watch. I got to be behind the scenes of the live quickfire challenge that happened on Facebook with the judges in the past week. Got to talk with the judges. It was entirely surreal, and I'll talk all about it after that. But let's start with the episode proper. Kurt, what'd you think about the second episode? We were very high on the premiere. Did this continue to meet your expectations?
It did. And just one kind of like show note for myself is it seems like every week when I'm about to like post about this on Facebook or talk about it, I never know whether to refer to it as I've been referring to it as Top Chef Denver. And there's this little voice in the back of my head that said, was it Top Chef Colorado? And I never was able to find online the correct thing, except during this episode. And so now I know for myself that it is officially Top Chef Colorado. And I really enjoyed episode two. I like the mise en place challenge. I liked some of the little bit of twist that was dealt to it this week, and I thought it was actually a solid and interesting Last Chance Kitchen. So, and I also say that and we'll talk about this a bit more, is I think one of the things I had predicted last week in terms of, you know, typically when a chef is on the bottom, I will say, you know, part of me, if like we're doing a draft, I'll want to say that, well, In my heart of hearts, I hope that they'll turn it around and that will be their story and they'll rise to the top. But you know what? They ultimately never do. And I was glad to see that some of that that actually turned on its head this week, and that we actually did see some of the people who were not so great last week rising to the occasion this week. So all in all, I enjoyed the episode. How about you, Haley?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, too. I just get so excited at the prospect of watching this show, and it never lets me down. I always feel like they do something exciting. Like, every season, there's a mise en place race, mm-hmm. but it's always fun, and I always get excited to see it. Mm-hmm. And I thought the main challenge was fun, too. I just liked this episode. I liked the character building we got from a few people. I just always enjoy this show. It's always a home run.
Awesome. Yeah. And I to go back to Kurt's point about it being a Top Chef Denver, I mean, I was pretty sure it was Top Chef Colorado because, and I don't know if this is a spoilery type of thing, but I do believe they're going to pull like a season 9 and season 13 and not just stay in Denver, go all around. I believe they're going to go to Boulder and Telluride and Aspen. So, you know, it's a much more economic language than, you know, Top Chef Denver and surrounding areas.
Yeah, I suspected it might be kind of like that. They did with, you know, like you said, you know, Top Chef California, and we I just completely avoid now all promos for Top Chef and previews of upcoming episodes, because as we've seen in the past, they tend to be a little bit spoilery, like even so much as when we come back from commercial coming up. Oh, the thing you were just kind of ending a cliffhanger on has completely been spoiled in the little, you know, 5 second promo you just showed. So I suspected they might be going to other places, but I definitely did not watch the this season on Top Chef.
All right, well, let's jump into episode two. We're staying in Denver for now as we're sort of reeling from the first elimination challenge. Kurt, you mentioned this is sort of Carrie's redemption mm-hmm. episode, separating the Kurds from the way, if you will, and truly rising to the top. She says that her new plan is to stop relying on previous dishes that she's done in the past as sort of a crutch mm-hmm. and create organically, which I find a little ironic looking back, because I'm pretty sure, didn't the dish that she won for, she said she's actually made before at one of her restaurants?
Oh, it could very well be, but I think that she, or you mean the, for this episode, the dumpling?
Yeah, the dumpling, yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of ironic. I also found it interesting that because it was really Tyler who was touting that in the first episode. He's like, he didn't come with any prepared recipes. Everything he's going to make is unique. And actually, it's kind of funny that when she makes that statement about I'm not going to be necessarily rely on fast dishes because she said she's with the past dishes, she knows the amount of time it takes to go into those. And so she's actually sitting in there right with Tyler when she talks about, you know, I'm going to create organically instead. And I wonder if that perhaps kind of arose out of maybe a conversation she was having with him or if it just arose organically in herself. But she did say that there were some twists that she had made to, I think, the dumpling that she ended up winning with in this episode. And I think it's like if it just strikes you, you know what, this thing that I've made in the past really fits this challenge, I'm going to go with it. I think that it's fair to maybe interpret that as a little bit as organic. So it's not relying on what she's done in the past, but just saying what springs to mind based on what she has in front of her. And if what springs to mind is literally, you know what, this would be perfect and not using it as a crutch, then I give it the thumbs up.
All right. Let's talk about this bear den as well, because we got it named last time, but they have really built the brand, complete with bear paws and growling slash a tiny bit of barking from one third of the bear den populace. Haley, what's your thought about this bear den formulation of Bruce, Tyler, and Chicago Joe?
Where did they get the bear paws from? Like, did one of them bring them?
Laura, like, you asked Laura, like, hey, can you go through your fridge a little bit and like bring back some bear paws you have lying around on hand?
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. I think it's fun for right now, but I think it could get old. Like when they're about to do the mise en place race and they got separated teams and they're like, oh, look, all the bears are here. And it was just kind of like, okay, this is going to get a little much for me.
Well, we've kind of, it seems like we've established that Tyler is now also referred to as Papa Bear, not to be confused with Papa Bear from Survivor. And I'm guessing just because earlier they had referred to, in the first episode, they referred to, you know, Joe's like 5-6 years younger than us. He'll get his sleep apnea machine in due time. I'm guessing he's Baby Bear. So I guess that
does that make Bruce Mama Bear?
I guess so. And I don't know if that makes Padma Goldilocks because she's like trying their food and stuff. But
I also remember once upon a time, I think it might have been in season 5, where there was a contestant that called Tom a bear with very different connotations. Yes. But like Haley said, we'll find out if this becomes overbearing depending on how long they last in the competition.
I'm heading out now.
Yeah.
No, please.
I got to check the clause in my contract to see if you're allowed to make those puns.
I really want to make a pause in this podcast to go get an alcohol.
Okay, we're officially done. We are done.
Say that now. Let's let those puns hibernate, and we'll see if they awake as the winter progresses. Let's move into our quick fire. The mise en place, but more importantly, Kurt, the mise en place relay sponsored by the one and only Blue Apron.
I think you mean Blue Kitchen. Was that it last week?
Yes, I guess the Canadian version, Blue Kitchen.
Like, it's funny. I was just like, I just got smacked in the face by it in this episode. It was like, screw you, Haley, for making a mistake.
It would be hilarious if, like, every episode, the show somehow, like, in a Nostradamus sort of fashion, completely, like, corrected something that we misspoke about in the previous episode. It was like, okay, Top Chef, we get it. We were wrong.
Listen, I mean, it still is eerie to me that we were talking about, oh, where should Top Chef go? You know what? Denver would be fun, and look where they ended up. So, I don't know. I think we should be checking our walls to make sure there's no surveillance equipment. Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, and I couldn't get my head past the prize being sponsored by Blue Apron. Because as somebody, I've used Blue Apron quite frequently. I am no longer a subscriber. But I know that they do sponsor other shows in the RHAP universe. But the idea for me of like a year's supply of Blue Apron, so that's like, it's like 52 consecutive weeks of Blue Apron shipping. I only hope that it's like 52 boxes, and maybe you can like space them out if you want to over a couple or a few years. Because for me, like getting one of those boxes every week as a single guy, that's your meal like every night. You can't go out to eat. You're wasting ingredients. So that would be a little bit of a nightmare for somebody like me. Plus, I just
does it. Okay, question. I don't like, yeah. I don't delve into these boxes because I live in rural Ontario and we don't get shipments of things. So you can get like 3 a week or 2 a week or 1 a week, or does it come every night?
You get one box a week. And typically, unless you get like the family plan, each box comes with 3 meals, and each meal is 2 servings, and they give you the perfectly proportioned amount of food for each serving. And it's really good. But sometimes like where I live in Chicago, there's just so many good restaurants around that I like to eat out or like, you know, order.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes a like, how do I work my schedule this week to do the cooking? And then when am I going to eat this meal? Do I have it for lunch instead? And I mean, it's the meals are great, and you get to like pick them and rotate. This is almost a promo for Blue Apron now.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
But you get to like pick like from this 6 to 8 meals. Here's the 3 that I want. And
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I did have it one time when I was at Mike's house.
Yes.
It was like a really delicious pasta with cheese, and it was wonderful. But I just like never completely understand.
Did Corinne from The Bachelor make that?
It was not cheesy pasta.
Okay, sorry.
It was pasta with cheese.
With cheese. Okay.
And but could you imagine, like, since now we're going to have like
Bachelor
Joe,
boxes?
Joe has a meal that's going to be in Blue Apron. We had Brooke's winning meal last season was in Blue Apron. Could you imagine if they branched out to like other reality shows and had reality stars just sponsor random Blue Apron meals?
That's an amazing idea. And actually, HelloFresh sponsors a lot of Bachelor contestants' Instagram posts, so I'm really shocked they haven't thought of that yet.
The Bachelor box. If I had the Bachelor
whatever
box,
goes well with wine.
Like literally Bachelor blocks. My dinner last night was buttered popcorn and wine, so it's they wouldn't have to really stretch too far for me to have a Bachelor of a food box.
That's amazing.
All right, so let's get into the mise en place itself. It is adjudicated by Panama and guest judge, local chef Troy Gard, who it's quite he's very bountiful with his restaurants. I should say, what was it, like 10 restaurants open and 3 on the way? That is a ridiculous. That's like a Duggar number of restaurants.
he's billed in the Chiron at the bottom of the screen as the owner of Tag Restaurant Group. And so like the moment it goes from like chef owner of like this sort like a listing 2 restaurants to, okay, you know what? We just got to refer to his restaurant group now. You know that there's a little bit of a food empire here.
So we divide up into 2 teams, 7 and 7. The blue team is Tyler, Chicago Joe, Bruce, Rogelio, Adrian, Claudette, and Brother Luck. The green team is Chris, Joe Stash, Tanya, Laura, 2, Carrie, and Fatima. They got 3 tasks, as I outlined in the very beginning of this podcast. Peel and brumoise 1 quart of shallots. Peel, destem, and slice 1 quart of mushrooms. And butcher 20 pieces of beef tenderloin, so they come out in like 7 to 8 ounce pieces. The twist in this version of the mise en place is that you do not have a set number for each task. You can put any number of people you want to on each section. And they take a couple of different strategies here. Haley, even though the blue team ultimately prevails, do you think their solution was the best one?
It's hard for me to think that putting one person on tenderloin was a good idea. Like I thought that putting 4 people on onions was good to get them ahead, but then when you get to the tenderloin, and we saw it that Bruce was really kind of behind on that, and yeah, he really benefited from 2 and whoever 2 is working with making a mistake and not weighing each piece of meat, and he really benefited from that. So I think putting 3, 2, and 2 would have been a better move.
I said 2 and 2. Yeah, it was 2 with 2 on the last. The only I agree. Like, it seemed like Adrian was a beast on the shallots in terms of like just like, you know, going through them. And you probably could have removed somebody from the first task to aid Bruce in the last one. But I think the one, and I don't think it was planned, but I think what ended up happening here, almost from a strategy perspective, was because they had such a lead at the beginning, because they stacked up the people so heavily. I mean, because the blue team had 4 people on the first task, there would, you know, they went into the the green team went into the last task needing to catch up. And so that almost forced them to be a little bit sloppy with the weights of their cuts. Mm-hmm. They like, you know, we got to eyeball this. And because they were kind of put in a position to be imprecise, that actually ended up benefiting the blue team. So I don't think it was intentional, but I think that's what ended up losing it for them. It's not just that they happened to misweigh the stake. It's that they went into it behind and they just assumed that they would get approximately the right cuts and they didn't.
Yeah, well, they were working fast, not smart necessarily. And this will definitely be a recurring theme of this episode, that two is not necessarily the most precise with his meat cuts. But I think the blue team might have faltered here as well with their planning in they put, what was it? It was Chicago Joe and Brother Luck, I think, on the mushrooms, who were their two biggest guys. Yeah. And you can't, like, unless you have slender fingers, it's a very delicate process and it can be tough to do. So they definitely might have lost a lot of advantages that, as you mentioned, Adrian sort of like Katsuji'd those shallots. But that lead almost evaporated when the two guys just weren't able to get their big old meaty hands around those mushrooms.
But then you saw Tanya was also put on the mushrooms and she like very specifically said in like the prelude to the challenge that, you know, she hasn't peeled a mushroom since 19.
I love her so much.
And so I was surprised to see that she was put on the mushrooms. And you know, so unless it was all Fatima, I don't know why that decision was made. I mean, maybe she just didn't. I guess also if you're sitting there, you don't want to like, you know, kind of take a step back and say, you know what, I haven't peeled a mushroom since the 90s. Maybe not something you want to announce to the team, but it's not like this is a show where people get voted off by each other.
But isn't peeling mushrooms just like riding a bike?
You know what? Here's the thing. I never knew that you peeled mushrooms. I knew that you destemmed them and sliced them. And like in terms of all my Blue Apron experiences, I've never once had to peel a mushroom. But then again, my solution for anything I do with garlic is I put it in a garlic press. Like regardless if it says to thinly slice it or to mince it or whatever, it just goes in the garlic press. So I'm not the mushroom expert, but I was surprised to like see them actually have to peel them.
All right, well, the blue team claims this victory here as, again, while Two and Chris were the first to get things checked, they totally Dan Foley'd it and were wrong. But Bruce is the one to work slow and steady, ends up claiming the victory for the blue team. But they only have 8 minutes and 20 seconds to cook with shallots and the filet and the mushrooms. A couple of fun back and forths here since the green team can only sort of stand back and observe. I like, Tyler, what are you doing over there? I'm making love. And also, I love already the shade thrown at Chicago Joe for cooking tartars. Of, no, Joe, how long are you going to marinate your steak for? He goes, oh, yeah, a good 45 seconds will probably be perfect.
There was definitely a little bit of a Last Chance Kitchen vibe in terms of some of the chefs cooking and some of the chefs standing by and commenting. Although, like, not to cross-pollinate our reality TV shows, I would love to see Jeff Probst come in and narrate a mise en place challenge one season. Adrian!
Yeah.
Whipping through the shallots! You know. That would be fun.
Well, then, but it's considering that this challenge is all about food. Does he have to do it in like his Jeff Probst sexy voice that he uses to describe every piece of food that they offer up on Survivor?
Yeah, I guess so. I had missed the part at the beginning where they said like there was a comment Bruce made saying, you know, I'm not taking, you know, I'm taking my own sweet time on this, and this is just going to impact our cooking time. I had missed the part at the beginning where they had said that, you know, however much time you have left in that 30 minutes after the mise en place is how much time you have to cook. And so, you know, that all became clear. So, okay, now you have 8 minutes and 20 seconds left to prepare your dishes. Like, oh, whoa, that's, I'm surprised that they didn't get an extra amount of time. But I thought that would the added time pressure there was kind of a fun element to the challenge as well.
Well, let's look through these dishes that took about 8.5 minutes to make. Haley, any highlights for you?
For me, I liked the look of the pan-seared, our brother's pan-seared steak with mushrooms, goat cheese, and like mm-hmm. a mignonette. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of mushroom sauces, especially when there's like cheese involved, and mm-hmm. it becomes really rich and like super salty. I love steak, so I'm into that. And then the mignonette looked like it kind of freshened up the dish, so it wasn't super heavy. I also loved Claudette's Baja-inspired steak with ajillo. I made notes today, guys. This is the first time in about 4 years of podcasting that I have made notes. I loved the idea of Claudette's. I love a Baja anything, just kind of like that like earthy spice to it. I would love Rogelio. Yeah, I would have loved a Rogelio's, except they said his sauce was broken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honestly, don't want a broken sauce. If you put any one of those ones, one of those dishes in front of me, would I say no? Absolutely not.
What about you, Kurt?
Yeah, I have to agree that brother had me at goat cheese. I love goat.
You say goat cheese to me, and I'm like, bury me in it. When the main challenge turned out to be a cheese challenge, I was like, I can't imagine anything better than this.
Oh, yeah.
Goat cheese is the GOAT.
Stop.
Yes, it is. So brother's dish, and it was like, and I believe the I kind of have an ongoing fennel count this season. I believe there was only one mention of fennel, and that was Bruce's quickfire dish. So I'd be staying away from that, even though there was some bourbon.
You have absolutely ruined fennel for me, honestly. Not even like ruined it for me, but I was watching Big Family Cooking Showdown or something like that on
Big Family Cooking Showdown.
It's amazing.
Is that the Blue Kitchen?
Yeah, you know, you need to watch it. It's on Netflix. It's like Great British Bake Off, but with food and family. So please, that is my recommendation to you guys. Go watch that show. Anyways, so one of the dishes one of the families was making last night was like fennel top something with a fennel salad. And I was like, Kurt would hate this.
Kurt would totally hate this.
And fennel on fennel.
I literally think my first ever Blue Apron dish involved fennel. I'm like, oh, this is interesting looking. And it was kind of the cold raw fennel versus cooked. And again, I will eat cooked fennel. It's the cold stuff. And so the just Bruce's filet. It was all cooked, so I probably would have liked it. But yeah, the goat cheese and the adding of hibiscus. It's not something I've ever had on a dish, but it's something where it's like, I know that I would definitely like, you know, 95% of it. And like there's this interesting side like bonus to it that I can like try something new. So I would have gone for brother's steak.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
Brother Luck is really emerging to be like, I guess, the most visually adept chef between like the purple potatoes from the elimination challenge last time. And now this, I think he's really going to like make his pop as well as the taste buds. He ends up on the top here, but he loses out here to Kurt's number one pick and our overall pick in the draft last week. Chicago Joe coming out with the shallot, mushroom and ginger marinated tenderloin with peppers. So even though Joe is going to cook in the elimination challenge, he wins immunity, $5,000 and a year's supply of Blue Apron. Kurt, are those like the best three prizes you could ever think of?
No, like the money, great. But like I said, like getting a year's supply of Blue Apron would just be overkill for me. It's like, unless I was,
but also it would be way overkill for a chef who make these things by themselves and probably
You've been cooking all day, so why don't you go home and cook? But this time we provided you the ingredients.
Like I said, when I subscribed to Blue Apron, it's like I would get it for a week and then I'd have to take like a week or two off just so I, you know, don't get overloaded. But it also comes with Blue Apron wine. And so I know that like with each of their dishes, they kind of have like a small, there's like, I'm not quite sure what the actual size of the bottle is, but it's more like individual.
Probably servings. Like a two glasser.
Yeah, something like that. So it's that would have been interesting to try that at least.
So we go into the elimination challenge. As Padma says, now it's time for some real chores, and we say goodbye to Mr. 13 Restaurants, and we bring in Alex Seidel, who Tyler becomes quite enamored with. Haley, is this love at first sight for you as well?
No, until he brought out the cheese, I wasn't all in.
Yeah. So you're not a fan of the long hair. Do care for you?
He's not my type, I guess I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't getting,
like, farmers are so amazing and they are the backbone of our entire existence. Would I marry a farmer? Probably not. I'm not great at getting up at 3 a.m. to go like hang out with cows. Just not my jam. I completely respect people whose jam it is, or whose cheese it is, I guess.
Kurt, what did you think about Alex sort of segueing into this elimination challenge where, you know, we've seen this a couple times, we even saw it last season of, we're going to take you on the farm, you're going to get to know my cheeses, and then you're going to incorporate these cheeses into a four-course progressive meal by team.
Well, I mean, I liked the little bit of mystery because at this point, they didn't know that they were going to be, you know, using the cheese as the ingredient. Like there was, they were thinking kind of all night about, you know, what is our dish? What is that mystery ingredient going to be? We even see, I think it's Adrian is saying how she's really used to planning. And so not knowing the ingredient ahead of time is frustrating. Probably not as frustrating as being sandwiched between Joseph and Bruce in that small back seat of the car. I felt so bad for her.
As Joe was like fawning over Bruce's Instagram feed, which was a really like weird, funny meta moment because I don't know, I might be challenged to ask Top Chef super fans out there who the most famous chef testant was going into the show, but Bruce might be up there considering Joe was like, hey, this thing I saw on your social media feed, you should probably do that dish.
Are you thinking of the same dish that I'm thinking of? Did we just become best friends? it was kind of one of those moments. And it turned out they were thinking of the same beet dish. I know, and I think that they may have ended up, you know, used actually developing that dish or a form of that dish for the it was the beet annulati. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. But I know it was definitely a beet dish that he saw on Bruce's feed, and they went with a beet dish. So they probably adapted it.
It really brought me back to the second episode of last season where they did the 7-course progressive meal. That was all focused on beets.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of was like a really good combo for me. I kind of wish I liked the seven course progressive and like the head to head. I thought that would have been a fun thing here, but I get why they don't do that every single season.
Yeah, we didn't have the humble radish showdown.
Oh, like the radish. Sorry, I get... Wait, no, they're not the same thing. Never mind.
It's interesting as well, though, because I'm pretty sure in that episode, which I actually think that was the first Top Chef episode you came onto this podcast.
Oh, yeah!
So it's in my memory for several reasons, but I think that also had the mise en place relay in it as well. So they're sort of like... copying off of the paper next to them, even though it's sort of their own paper, but it's sort of like making some small additions so that the teacher doesn't realize that it's the exact same thing. But that being said, I really enjoyed it and I like incorporating this culture in here. I know that some of our Midwestern friends might not necessarily think that Colorado is the dairy state as they claim to be, I was going to say we have someone on the podcast who can speak to that, but I think the trip to the farm was a really cool way to start exploring this Colorado culture.
Yeah, I have to back one of our listeners, Christine from Wisconsin, that as you know, as a neighbor of Wisconsin and somebody who travels there pretty much every month, it's a little bit jarring to hear. I'm not saying Denver doesn't have a great cheese culture, which is a really understated pun, but to refer to it as the dairy state is really doing Wisconsin some disservice. But I'm sure they have excellent cheese there, Alex.
Well, before we get to the farm itself, I want to put a little bit of a spotlight on Claudette, who does end up going home because we get some character development from her as well. A few things. First off, she lists off, you know, essentially maybe her entire Tinder profile of, you know, 32 going on 33, son goes to high school, I'm a Leo. But the interesting thing is that Claudette is into the quote unquote good witchy stuff. Haley, what is your opinion on what we found out about Claudette between this and the astrologer?
It just makes me more obsessed with her and like more devastated that she left.
Yeah. She's
just such a great character and she's strong and cool and awesome and fun. And also like, oh, also I like witchy stuff, but also like I'm a badass and I'm going to cook you some mean ass food and F you and your tarantula. Cause here I am.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I just love her. And I'm like devastated that she's gone.
I think more fun stuff from her in the first episode with the hashtag Claudette side eye. And you get to really, I think, see her character stand out a lot in actually The Last Chance Kitchen. So I thought in terms of like this episode, we didn't get as much Claudette as I wanted to see.
So the teams are have to cook a 4-course progressive meal again, but they need to each meal dish needs to highlight one of the 4 cheeses that Alex and his bearded friend got to show off to the chefs: the sheep's milk ricotta, the raw milk cheese, the Shepherd's Halo and the Sheep's Milk Feta. Now, from a pure cheese connoisseur perspective, Kurt, again, as our requisite Midwesterner, without even putting them in a dish, did you have a preference of these four cheeses just looking at them?
No. I mean, I like cheese. Well, actually, I should say yes. Like, right above fennel is ricotta in my
okay.
I'm not a ricotta fan.
Oh my God, I'm the opposite. I love ricotta. Like, spread it on anything and I'm so in.
But I think, like, I like it. It tends to be why I'm not a huge lasagna fan, is I've not had a ricotta based lasagna that I like. I don't like it necessarily as baked into something. It's kind of clumpy. I don't know. But I think I might like it with a dessert, but I would rather have like a feta or a goat cheese with a dessert. So that's my take on the cheeses. I would have liked all of them, but probably ricotta would have been at the bottom.
What about you, Haley?
How dare you? I am offended. The ricotta I'm so in on, that sounds delicious. And honestly, all of them sound great. I've actually never had like a sheep's cheese, so I would really be interested in trying that.
Yeah, the Shepherd's Halo would probably be my pick, just because I'm actually not really a fan of hard cheeses. I'm much more a fan of soft cheeses, so like that's automatically going to get my preferential treatment. So the Shepherd's Halo just seemed like it seemed really creamy and soft, so that would probably be the one that I would go for the most. But either way, no matter what cheese we like, they need to incorporate all of them into their meals in some sort of way, shape, or form. We see these teams start to formulate stuff. Adrienne was not able to prepare beforehand, but now that she has the ingredient in mind, she can start her proper preparation. And that's going to involve the pairing of fish and cheese, which, while sounds a little weird on the surface, she says is going to pay off. Spoiler alert, it doesn't necessarily pay off.
Well, I think it would have. I mean, we'll talk about like why the dish ended up failing when we kind of get more to the judges' table. But it's funny, there's a great food podcast to check out, listeners, is Dan Pashman's Sporkful podcast. Kind of a really fun, interesting approach to just talking about food. And occasionally he'll just have someone on to kind of interview. And one of the rapid fire questions he'll always ask during an interview is, name a food that is not improved by the addition of either chocolate or cheese. And several times the guests have responded, fish. And so when I hear Adrienne say that she's got a fish and cheese dish, my immediate reaction is, ugh. But it's something that she's made many times. She's kind of like a light touch of cheese, or a light addition of cheese, and it actually pairs well. So I would have trusted her on this. And I don't necessarily think it's the idea of the pairing, as much as the fact that we'll talk about it more, but the kind of where the cheese fell in that pairing.
Mm-hmm. On the other team, we have Joe Stash seems to sort of be taking the lead, or at least probably is the most commanding voice in the room, I should say. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have someone like Laura, who in the car, her car ride up, was talking about the fact that she was, you know, a trained pastry chef, but she decides I don't necessarily, Chris and Tanya have an idea for dessert. I'm fine not doing it. Now, it's going to be totally fine later, because she's totally going to impress making the cracker with the rind in the first course. But Haley, what did you think about this moment? Do you think this might be Laura's swan song, or bear song, as it were?
No, I didn't. I kind of felt like Claudette's story, what we were being told there, was much more damning in an edit standpoint. Like, sorry, I don't mean to come out with that, but it's just like, that's, as soon as I saw that, I was like, Claudette's in trouble. And it's funny because Laura kind of did have a similar story-ish, but it went the exact opposite direction. I didn't feel like Laura was in trouble. I kind of understood where she was coming from. She's like, I don't usually have to deal with big personalities like this. And Joe is really trying to take over things and kind of like make sure he has his finger on the pulse of every single dish, which was not my favorite thing to see from Joe. And I can't remember who said it later on his team. Like, yeah, I remember when I was 20, I was like that too.
Chris, I think.
Once he's got 10 more years on him, he's not going to be like that. But I thought Laura handled it super, super well. She was just like, okay, if you guys want to do this, that's fine. I'm just letting you know that, like, this is my background. I can do it. But fine, I'll do this. And sometimes we do see that lead to some trouble. Kind of like Claudette was like, well, this isn't really what I do, but I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to go with it instead of standing my ground. Like it was, they really had, Laura and Claudette really had parallel stories that just went in complete opposite directions.
Yeah.
If
Laura had been on a pairing or had been on a course that had served pastry and it had failed because she hadn't stepped forward to help with it, I think that would have been one thing. But here she was put on a completely different course and she still applied some of that flexibility that she talked about in the first episode. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, where I live and work was like, we try to minimize food waste as much as possible. Don't have predators coming into your kitchen. And she kind of, I really loved how she adapted that food. Like typically we use every part of the elk. It's like, well, here we use every part of the cheese. And I really,
she truly came up with the most creative idea of this entire challenge. And I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And my mind was blown by that idea.
Yeah. And us not having a chance to taste the food, and I'm sure that's what put Carrie's over the top to win the challenge. I was surprised that Laura didn't end up winning the challenge, just given how much the guest judges raved about how she used their product. But I thought Laura's like, I'm a trained pastry chef, and it not being utilized might have actually made it impacted Joe's performance in the challenge in terms of, where he fell in the rankings, if he was shown to have been overbearing, but it all ended up going fine for him.
He's not even in the bear den and he's overbearing.
He was dressed like Luigi at Whole Foods. Did anybody else pick up on that? He kind of had like the little like green Luigi plumber's cap and the mustache. It was kind of strange.
Well, speaking of Bearden, can we talk about Tyler for a second and his choice of costume as a child? Because that is magnificent.
Julia Child as a child?
Julia Child. Yeah, not only for Halloween, but apparently like every Friday night afterwards. And that picture is just fantastic.
Oh, Tyler.
Haley, as a Drag Race fan, do you feel Tyler was serving you Julia Child realness?
A little bit better than milk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The face was not beat, but I would say the rest of the look was really pulled off well. So that night, the green team sits down. Laura, as we mentioned before, even though she does end up doing well, she's still a little concerned about their team in general and just creating a unified dish. And what I've sort of realized as well is that Chris, really, truly, I think speaking to like the soul of his Amish soul, is like kind of functioning as almost the heart of this show. Like he's very deeply from an emotional perspective. So here he's sort of like the rallying cry for the green team of, we need to trust in each other. We need to believe in each other. And then we're going to do well. Kurt, are you seeing the same thing I am? Or am I just sort of pulling things out of thin air?
No, I not necessarily the heart of the show, but at the very least, kind of a mature mediator for the team. Like they had it seems like they kind of had their own like team dinner, and there were some things that Laura wanted to discuss and bring up. And then after she did, Chris kind of steps in and kind of vocalizes, like, basically, Joe, love this, love this, love this, but here's something you could work on. You just need to let go of some things, and I think we would be even like more awesome than we are. And I think he's able to, not that Laura did a bad job by any means of trying to raise her concern, but I think that Chris did a good job of approaching the issue he saw with Joe without giving it too hard of an edge to create some sort of disconnect in the team.
Well, Joe is not necessarily out of the woods in terms of difficulties yet. Let's talk about Two and the Lamb. Haley, what happened here?
A lot of things happen. I just think that this dish, even in conception, wasn't strong. Visually, it made no sense. And I feel like they should have thought of that, like a corn pudding with just like a piece of lamb on top. It's not visually appealing. And the mirror dish with the lamb and the spring vegetables and stuff, it may not have been a home run, but at least it looked good. Where this was just like, you guys are like on Top Chef. You know that, right? And you're putting that out to the judges. This whole thing made no sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, did you feel like, Joe is up, really up in arms when Tom does his kitchen walkthrough and he's like, hey, Two, let me teach you a couple tips about how to tie this lamb off. Do you feel like Joe should have been, you know, as offended as he was or embarrassed that Tom had to like educate to how to do that, or do you think he might have been a little over the top in that reaction?
I think he was being a little bit over the top in the reaction. And it's not something it just might be something we've not seen in previous seasons before, but this is the first time I recall a chef testant kind of freaking out at the prospect that Tom was about to walk into the kitchen. He's like, okay, guys, Tom's almost here. Okay, everybody clean up your spaces. And, you know, like I've not seen that before, not to say that it hasn't happened, just that we haven't shown it. I think, you know, not all chefs are going to be perfect at everything. I think it's a bigger discussion about, you know, was it unfair that Tom did this? I mean, he kind of made a call on the spot. Like, yeah, this isn't doing too much. I'll show you how I typically tie these things up. I think he overreacted a little bit.
But also, why didn't Joe step in and say, hey, this is how it should be done? Because like, this was his dish too. And it's his team. It's not like he's watching from afar. Like, I don't know why he didn't just say, hey, can I take 3 minutes to be like, show you this?
I wonder if, because Joe was on two dishes, because that's the other thing as well. When you have seven people and four courses, you can either have everyone pair up and have one person go trice, like what the green team did with Joe, or you could do what the blue team did, pair off with three pairs and then have brother end up cooking the dessert by himself at the end. I wonder if Joe was spending more effort on the dish he ended up doing with Carrie than just sort of saying, yeah, I'll provide this sort of like, you know, corn pudding for Tuesday's dish and let him sort of handle his own thing.
But if your name is on the dish, wouldn't you want to make sure it's like, it's what you want? And he was saying to us like, oh, this isn't what I want. This isn't what I want. Well, why wouldn't you run over and be like, hey, I need you to tie the lamb like this. I need you to be really careful about your knife cuts. I need this and I need that. Yeah, it couldn't have taken that long.
It almost seemed like the initial cut of lamb that they got, like comparing his lamb to Rogelio's lamb, it almost seemed like they just got a more poorly butchered set of lamb, which was like kind of like strike one for Joe's sanity. The only thing I can think of is that when Tom came in, two just started tying up the lamb, and there maybe just wasn't an opportunity for Joe to get there. So that was strike two. And I think strike three was, okay, now two burnt the carrots. And two's promising Joe it's not going to be bitter. And we didn't get too much commentary about the carrots being poor in two's dish. But there did seem to be several things kind of going wrong. Maybe this is Joe overcorrecting in terms of, like, I heard what was being said last night. I need to let some things go. So even though we had planned on me being a part of this dish, there's a lot of this I need to let two run with. And so maybe that was it. He was just kind of like, he actually took some of the critique from the team dinner the previous night, and he was trying to give two a little bit more leeway. I'm not sure how things ended up the way they ended up.
Well, let's segue into the dishes themselves, as we're already starting to speak about them, and we'll talk definitely talk about that lamb a little more as we get to course three, but we'll start in the beginning with course one here. Claudette and Adrian make a smoked trout with a cacio pecora, trout skin chips, and zucchini, and they tried this method where they were trying to actually use the cheese as a seasoning, so they didn't really salt the fish. Instead, they hoped that sort of like the saltiness of the cheese would serve as a seasoning. Fatima and Laura make a shepherd's halo cheese with the rind terrines, which go over much better than Adrian and Claudette's dish. Adrian and Claudette are ultimately going to end up on the bottom, and Claudette goes home here. Haley, what did you think about these two first course dishes?
I didn't agree with the decision to make the cheese more of a seasoning rather than an actual like centerpiece of the dish. Like, it's a cheese challenge. Yeah. Like, you should be making it as cheese forward as you can. And I said last week that some of my favorite dishes on Top Chef are the ones that are fairly simple and not too over the top, but just have this like real twist of creativity. And I think Laura and Fatima really just nailed that. It was cheese and crackers. Like, they serve cheese and crackers on Top Chef. But like I said, Laura made these crackers using the rind of the cheese, and just using the cheese in so many different ways is just exactly what I want to see in this challenge.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is one big example of why these types of simple base challenges really work well, is because You know, you're allowing them much more room to step out of the box. And so when it's just do something that features cheese, you have someone like Laura who's really able to use every part of the cheese or the bear and say, oh, yeah, this rind that, you know, people disregard or throw away or say is the, you know, the least flavorful part of the cheese. I'm going to use it to make something that you can spread the cheese on. So like you said, Haley, it's deceptively simple, but the fact that she was able to, I mean, they were, as we mentioned before, the cheesemaker and Alex were like, besides themselves, that someone actually came up with this idea of like running the rind through a pasta maker to make bread or a form of bread out of it. It's a really, really cool idea.
Yeah. And I think between the two, even though I'm 99% sure I would have enjoyed the cheese and crackers more. And I think Haley is completely right. Cause I think at the end of the day, I was wondering, you know, what was it that caused, say, Claudette to go home over Rogelio? And I think it was the fact that, you know, the cheese wasn't it's hard to send someone home to keep somebody that didn't necessarily highlight the main ingredient that was supposed to be used. But that having been said, I would have been intrigued enough by a trout cheese pairing to at least want to try it and see if it was a success. And it sounds like the trout wasn't necessarily the trout that was the issue. It was kind of calling it, it wasn't smoked as much as they had kind of billed it to be, and the cheese wasn't as front and center.
Yeah, the cold smoke went literally up in smoke. It did not necessarily pay off. And I mean, Panma also said, like, I usually hate fish and cheese, but I like this ... because you can't really taste the cheese.
Exactly.
So let's go to the second course here. We've got Joe and Bruce making sheep's milk feta and beef agnolotti with scallions and fonduta. Carrie and Joe, ultimately Carrie's going to win for this, a potato and ricotta dumpling with butter sauce and hazelnut relish. Haley, what'd you think about these dishes?
I thought that these two dishes were probably the best matched pair, almost. Mm-hmm. They were pretty
even. In terms of being on equal footing?
Yeah, they're okay. Pretty, like, evenly good.
Okay.
Like, I figure, like, either of these dishes would have been, like, the winner of their round. Or not of their round, but of their team. Right. The dumplings, oh my god, like, give those to me right now.
Yeah, this idea of cooking it on one side is really interesting. I wasn't sure, you know. This is why Tom's so great, is that he's like notoriously hard to read. I'm like, oh, why do you do it on one side? And she's like, I want to go for a diversity in textures. He's like, okay. And you can't tell if that's good or bad, but he loved it.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing, is that he's good at asking non-leading questions. Like, it's legitimately, it's not a passive aggressive, what were you thinking doing that? It's literally, I just want to know, did you do that on purpose? And you can't read, I think trying to read too much into what Tom is saying is just going to lead you down a road to madness that's not going to do you any good.
Yeah. So let's move on to the lamb course here, because I agree with you, Haley, that I think, you know, if the blue team won, I think Chef Joe or Bruce would definitely have won this challenge. On the other hand, neither one of these lamb dishes pay off. Rogelio and Tyler are going to end up in the bottom, and they make it very, very clear that if the green team had lost, T would probably be on his way out the door. So Rogelio and Tyler make a lamb loin with spring vegetables and shepherd's halo cheese. Two and Joe go for a seared lamb and corn grits with the cacio pecora, and also some hay as well. Isn't that what Two was talking about as well in the kitchen, to sort of like round out the bitterness? Kurt, yeah. I know it's sort of like a game of inches at this point, but did you prefer one lamb dish over the other?
Conceptually, I probably would have wanted to try, if I'd seen them on a menu, I would have wanted to try Two and Joe Stash's lamb, only because I do like grits, and I do like the idea of kind of like fancied up grits. It's like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like they said, the butchery needs to be perfect. It seemed like a lot of the issues were about the butchery of the lamb. The corn grits were more of like a corn pudding that somebody dropped a lamb chop on. There wasn't a lot of commentary on the cheese itself. And so I wonder if, like, just like, you know, Claudette and Adrian's dish, was the cheese perceived as an afterthought here? It seemed like a lot of the critique was about the non-cheese elements of the dish, but it also didn't seem like there was a lot of commentary. The fact that there wasn't a lot of commentary about the cheese makes me think it wasn't as prominent as it could have or should have been.
Mm-hmm. Haley, what'd you think about these dishes?
I agree. I wish that both of these dishes were cheese forward. That's what I wanted. I wanted a cheese forward dish. I wanted whatever the cheese was to be the first thing in the title here. Like the corn and grits, it's like, oh yeah, I guess there's cheese in here. And the spring veggies, it's like, oh, okay, you threw some cubed pieces of cheese in here just to fill the brief. So I feel like both these dishes were just real disappointments, honestly. And I'm kind of surprised that the Rogelio and Tyler dish didn't end up in the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely, I mean, I think it's tough because I think we'll definitely get to judge's table, but I would think that it probably came down between Claudette and Rogelio. I know that Adrian definitely had to take blame for that dish, but like even Tom admitted, like, okay, you tried something with the cheese as the seasoning and it didn't work. So I feel like that sort of put her in a requisite, third from the bottom. And I think Tyler was fourth from the bottom, even though his grains were al dente. He sort of like got dragged down along with everybody. Not a good episode for Tyler too. He had some fantastic confessionals, but he was in the bottom in the quick fire and in the elimination challenge. Definitely a bit of a leap after winning the first elimination challenge of the season. But yeah, the Rogelio thing was also really interesting because during the whole lamb literal butchering before the service, you know, Joe was saying, oh, I'm looking over at Rogelio's lamb and it looks perfectly butchered and perfectly cooked. But Rogelio had a lot of problems with temperature with his lamb that he doesn't seem to even realize even at judge's table.
Yeah. It's not often that you get like the subtitled commentary from the judges as the people are leaving the room. Yeah, I was fully expecting Rogelio to go home, to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, because I would say that, you know, we have Rogelio, we have people like Two, again, this is like the second episode in a row where they say, well, Two, you probably would have been eliminated or in the bottom if this thing didn't happen. Haley, could either one of these people go through like a Two-demption, if you will? Do we think that they can have a chance of like overcoming? Because I would say at this point, they
to
might
pull
be...
a carry?
Yeah, exactly. They coming out with pig's blood and trying to slay the competition quite literally. But I mean, I would argue that if we're doing like power rankings, these two would probably be near the bottom for me.
I would agree. I think Two has stumbled during two main challenges in a row.
Yeah.
That's not a great thing. And I know in the show, they don't really base it on like what you've done in the past. But I could see them taking that into consideration. It's like, well, you screwed up here. Like if he has another temperature issue. Oh, no, like, I'm sorry. That was Rogelio. I feel like too focused on just something else. I don't know what it is. He's just like not competition focused.
He's focused on making things American nostalgic, right?
Yeah.
I did think it was amusing that he considered the way to save the dish would have been to instruct the diners on how to eat it, which Tom, the judges love that. If you have to tell the people how to eat it, but that saving the dish might by telling the diners to eat it with their hands, it would have added an element of fun and potentially have like, you know, skewed the perception of the dish. I'm just glad he didn't go down that road.
I was going to say the last episode you probably watched was that California episode where they had to make meat for that big meal when the judges were like hungry, literally for tearing things off with their hands. So maybe that's fun. Let's bring that element into, you know, fine dining.
Yeah.
So we finish off with dessert here. Brother Luck is on his own, making a blueberry tart with whipped ricotta, grated almond, and grapefruit zest. Chris and Tanya, fried dough with sheep's milk feta ice cream, chocolate ganache, and orange cream. Padma declares Chris and Tanya's dessert her favorite that she ever had in the history of Top Chef. Haley, obviously you can't taste it, but do you feel Padma's words are warranted here?
I'm not sure. Then I saw both of them. I think I would have chosen Brothers, honestly. It just looked a little better than just like fried dough and white ice cream. Like, it was just a very monotone plate Chris and Tanya had. But I'll trust her judgment. Like, I love a chocolate ganache and orange cream. That sounds delicious. Feta ice cream is something I'd be really interested to try. Fried dough is so simple, but again, I love the simplicity. I think both these desserts sounded amazing, looked amazing. I think they were both winners, but it just happened that Chris and Tanya's was so good that Brothers just kind of got pushed to the side almost.
Kurt, I mean, it's pretty obvious which dessert you would prefer, right?
Yeah, I would have. I like berries, but the ricotta, and I'm also, and like, everybody's learning about like Kurt's little food, even though I'll like literally will eat anything. Anybody who like has follows me on Instagram knows this. It's like the great, I'm not a huge fan of citrus in desserts. So like the grapefruit zest one got me. Even though there is some orange cream in the other one, I would have, you know, you had me at fried dough and I really wanted to try the, like Haley said, the sheep's milk feta ice cream. So I probably would have, if I had to choose between the two based on the description, I would have gone for Chris and Tanya's dessert. Although the texture somehow turned off Thor. So that's not an easy thing to do.
I was going to say, it is really interesting to have him make this really big declaration of like, this is my favorite dessert that I've ever had, followed with this guy being like, I don't like it. Or I think it was Alex who was like, I know, I'm a texture guy. I don't like the ice cream.
Yeah, it's he didn't look like Thor to me. He looked a little bit like a surfer version of Philip Seymour Hoffman. But I'm not going to judge Tyler's, you know, perception of others. But yeah,
so you say like a surfer version of Philip Seymour Hoffman. So Philip Seymour Hoffman in the movie Twister, essentially.
Sure. Yeah, there you go. But then, like, you know, the tart, like, Tom's was underbaked, so that it seemed like each one did have issues. But again, it's just like me and fennel. It seems like texture. I'm not sure if it was like texture in desserts or texture in ice cream, but texture seemed to be a big thing for him. It also seemed maybe something that he could like look past. But I would have definitely wanted to try the fried dough.
All right, so we get to judges' table here. As we mentioned before, the ones on top are Carrie's and Joe Stash, along with the Chris and Tanya dessert that we just spoke about. And Laura. Actually, yeah, and Laura. Laura, sorry. Backtrack and all that. Yeah, basically everyone but the two in Joe Stash dish are on the top. I should also mention here, Chris and Fatima, this is their second week in a row that they've been at the top of the elimination challenge, but Carrie takes it. She carries the day, quite literally, which makes me happy. I'm happy to see, again, this, I know we're only two episodes in, but to me, this is really looking like a lot of people can really win at this point, and Carrie has definitely sort of like brought herself up from the back of the pack and a couple of not so good meals in the first episode to win a challenge.
Yeah, I think it'll next week will kind of maybe prove to us, like, has she now regained her footing? Does she finish like in the middle to top? Does she sink back to the bottom again? I like to see this kind of variance in our contestants so that you don't necessarily know for sure, oh, you know, Carrie's going to be on the bottom again. I mean, a little bit worried for Adrian for the same reason, is like, even though she didn't go home, she was on the bottom of the elimination challenge in the first week. And she was kind of there alongside Claudette in the second week, even though I feel she kind of beasted it out in the quickfire. But I was glad to see that there was somebody who kind of turned their story completely around from week one to week two.
And on the other side of that, unfortunately, as we mentioned before, Claudette ends up getting the chop here. Haley, I know you said you were a big fan of Claudette, but were you surprised to see her go here?
Not really, but I'm upset about it, honestly. I like her a lot. And I don't mean to get all girl powered. I'm going to. There's only six women in the competition. Mm-hmm. Four of them have been in the bottom and two of them have gone home. So when we go into the competition having an uneven gendered number, it sucks to see the women fall so fast. And, you know, I like my ladies.
Yeah,
why do you think
I
picked a team of all ladies? And especially in the restaurant industry that is so male dominated, to kind of see the women fall first, it just kind of sucks, honestly.
Well, and especially after, like, we had Shirley and Brooke be such strong chefs and finish in the finals last season. I agree. It's a little disheartening to, like, see things fall so fast. But, you know, I think that Fatima has a good chance of going far. I feel like Tanya is very solid, and I feel like Adrian, you know, her Le Bernard Denmark will come to fruition at some point, and she'll be able to she'll be able to pull a heel turn and be able to rise up from the ashes. So I have confidence in who's left.
Yeah. And Laura, we've been getting like some really awesome story building from her. So I could see her going far. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I was wondering, we got a lot of Alaska stories last week, and I was like, is this going to be a recurring thing? But I'm really enjoying them. So I'm hoping it's a recurring thing. It's a little bit like, well, where I come from, this happens. And so I'm going to apply it to my cooking here. So I'm actually really enjoying that more than I thought I would. But I honestly thought going into this that Rogelio was going to go home. But then I guess if I twist my focus to be, okay, it was a cheese challenge. His dish was a lot more, I think, about the lamb kind of being inconsistently cooked, and it wasn't as much an issue with the cheese as Claudette and Adrian's dish was. So I can see why that pairing was targeted. I guess if there's any debate, it's whether or not it was should have been Claudette or Adrian that went home.
All right, well, let's segue here into, we'll keep talking Claudette, because Claudette goes into Last Chance Kitchen. Kurt, what is the Last Chance Kitchen challenge for this week?
This episode was entitled Miss Muffet's Favorite. And so perhaps predictably, we get some curds and whey. You're tying back to the cheese from the episode proper. But then the little surprise of the spider from the nursery rhyme in the form of needing to include a dried tarantula in their dish. So they have to basically make a dish for Tom and his beer. That involves curds, whey, and dried tarantula that somehow pairs with a liquid nitrogen frozen beer.
I'm pretty sure this is why Antonio Mazzaro is not able to commit to doing another season of this podcast full time, is because I knew he had advance warning. There was going to be a spider challenge, and he's a known arachnophobe. Haley, what did you think about the concept of this challenge?
I almost puked. I had to do something else while I was listening to this because I couldn't look at it. Every time they like, I'm getting a little bit like nauseated even like talking about it. I wrote down every dish that happened in this episode. I was about to write the Last Chance Kitchen ones, but I could not because I couldn't focus on it. When they broke off the little piece of arm to eat, I couldn't do it. And when Marcel was like, oh, it's very earthy, I was like, I'm sorry, I can't. I just can't do bugs. I can't do it.
Oh, you're very Kwame in that regard.
Like, if there's a spider in my room, fine, I'll just let it live its life. But if I have to eat one, like, I'm sorry, I'm just not doing it. I can't do weird food challenges. I'm just not there. I was literally braiding my hair while listening to this because I couldn't focus on watching it, or else I would be sick.
I can actually just imagine you kind of doing that. Like, I'm visually picturing you like as a nervous head. Like, I just need to distract myself.
I had to get up from my computer and be like, I can't do this right now.
I can imagine you braiding your own hair, but also like dry heaving while you're doing it. Listening to this,
it's not too far off, honestly.
I'll admit something.
I actually like tweeted like, "Oh my god, I love it, cheese challenge!" And then I was like, "Oh god, and Last Chance Kitchen is a spider challenge." And Antonio was like, "Yeah." As soon as I heard it, I turned it off. I'm not doing this.
Oh my god, I'll admit something, and this might just speak to how depraved of a person I am, but I kind of want to try dried tarantulas now after watching this.
I wouldn't say I want to as much as if it was like in front of me, and I would try it. It's something I'm curious about.
Go for it. I'm going to have to sit out of that meal. I'm sorry.
I'm not a fan of olives, but I guess I found I'm a substitute for it.
Just soak them in plenty of olive oil first.
And when they were like, oh, it's dried, I thought it was like, I'm gonna puke, I'm gonna throw up. Oh my god, when he was like, oh, I was expecting it to be wet. Oh,
that's like a nice wet spider to literally wet your appetite.
I truly don't know what's worse, if they were wet or dry. Like, I just don't know what would be worse, because both are just horrifying to me.
I know this is a
it was a tarantula. Like, maybe if they were small spiders, I could deal with it more, but holy shit.
I know it's a trigger word for a lot of people, but if it was a moist tarantula, then then yeah.
Moist tarantula laws sounds like some sort of euphemism.
Yes.
That is not our hashtag. That's not it. We can't use it.
So whatever you do,
put that out there in the universe.
Whatever you do, do not use the hashtag moist tarantula after this podcast.
Yes, please do not. But yeah, so we have Claudette facing down with Kwame, Marcel, and Leanne. I'll admit, I was a little surprised that Claudette survived here just because, you know, I'm usually going to take the field in these because these are all chef testants who have varying degrees of experience cooking dishes on this show. But surprisingly, Marcel is the one to pack up his knives and go here along with, we didn't talk about this last week, but Haley, I'm sure you have thoughts about Marcel's hair.
I hate it so much. I can't even look at it and not want to die. Like, it's just, I can't look at it. It's awful. But on the other hand, Claudette's styling in this Last Chance Kitchen, girl, you are on fire. Great braids. Great gray lipstick. Can you please tweet me and let me know what that one is, because I want it.
I was gonna say, I know you're a big fan of the colored lipstick.
Yeah, especially you get wild with lipstick. I am so in on you. And then like her horn rimmed glasses, she just looks so stunning and wonderful. And when Thomas, you don't look nervous, she's like, I'm not.
She was
like amazing, like yeah. Queen, robbed goddess with a period in the middle somewhere. And when Tom's like, oh, are you afraid to cook tarantula? She's like, I've cooked worse. I've cooked weirder things. Like, oh, I love you so much.
Yeah, I really liked her confidence and the fact that, I mean, she even calls out that I think the other three chefs are going to try to mask the flavor of the tarantula. I want Tom to taste it. And I'm like, this is awesome.
What do you think about the other dishes as well? I want to specifically focus on Leanne's and this grime time thing. And Kurt, I know you've been talking about movie theater popcorn. It was very reminiscent to me of like movie theater popcorn butter of like, it's really bad, but at the same time, it's really good.
I was still trying to figure out what exactly it was. And all I could figure out from the way she was talking about it and what we saw was that it's almost like homemade nacho cheese, potentially tastes 10 times better, but is 10 times worse for you. I was really, and then the honey vinaigrette, just like that's a kind of an interesting combination. So I think of the four dishes, I would have wanted to try hers, Leanne's the most. But just for the fact that it won, I also wanted to try Claudette's.
And didn't Leanne also deep fry some cheese curds and some tarantula bits?
There was crispy tarantula over, and then there were fried curds as part of this grind time.
Yeah, she like sort of like a tempura.
I love deep fried cheese curds, but I can't imagine the horror of taking what I thought was a deep fried cheese curd and eating it, and it was tarantula.
That is now your worst nightmare. You cannot look at a plate of cheese curds. Nightmare. Oh, I'm so sorry. The kitchen accidentally mixed in dried tarantula into it.
It's definitely, I'm guessing it's the sort of thing, Haley, you just can't know going into it that that's what you're going to be eating.
Stop. I can't even be surprised by it. No, don't. Please don't do that. Please.
I promise you, I will never secretly feed you dried tarantula. Or moist tarantula. Either one. You will never get that.
God. Just like your hashtags, Kurt is 100% sincere with those comments. I do want to talk about Marcel here because he tries to do like an Italian take, trying to channel his time in Napoli with some fresh mozzarella, heirloom tomato, a whey emulsion, prosciutto, and sort of using again the tarantulas as sort of olives. He ends up going home. He ends up being the clear least favorite. Tom says that the mozzarella really did not turn out well. Instead of it being soft, it was dense and hard, and the olive substitutes were a little too dry here.
Yeah, the cheese seemed to be you have to remember this wasn't I keep having to tell myself this wasn't a tarantula challenge. This was in fact a cheese challenge. And you do have to do the cheese in the way and kind of use it in an interesting way. And unfortunately, just seemed here he really kind of fell short on the cheese.
Mm-hmm. Haley, we only got Marcel for a few episodes here. I would say, you know, he was one of the most notable chef testants. I would not say maybe necessarily for his food, but more so for his personality in the first few seasons. Were you surprised to see him go so early on here in LCK?
I was very, very surprised to see him go so early on. I thought he had a chance to really just make it through the competition and maybe even be the one to come back. Or to go in for the first time.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not necessarily coming back here. It's a first-time entrance.
Yeah. I talked about this last week in terms of conversations with some of the patrons, that, you know, there's something strange about somebody going back into the competition who never, like, even met any of the chef testants that they're returning to. And at least this, it's going to be, we're going to have in the next Last Chance Kitchen, you know, two current seasons versus two returnees. And so I think I'm going to be very surprised if Leanne and Kwame actually make it all the way back into the competition. Now, if I had to pick one of the original four who would potentially have fought their way back, it would have been Marcella or Leanne. I just didn't foresee Jen Carroll or Kwame necessarily making it all the way. And now with Marcella out of the running, I have, like, it just kind of shows the power of the contestants that they actually cast this season. So I'd be very surprised if Leanne or Kwame win all the way out to make it back in.
Yeah, I would be surprised if one of them did as well, especially if we're doing LCK the way they usually do it, where they just keep going and until someone comes back at like final four or final five. If they did sort of, I know you talked about this last week, Kurt, but if they did like what they do on Survivor with Redemption Island, where like halfway through, or even what they did in like Top Chef Boston, where halfway through somebody comes back into the competition, and then somebody comes back again at the very end, then I could see it happen. But if, you know, Kwame and Leanne need to win what, like 10 more Last Chance Kitchen competitions, and at one point as well, they're going to stop doing like the person we like the least is going to get eliminated, and they're going to start doing some real butchering, Bruce style, hopefully not two style, and saying like, okay, one person moves on, the other three are cut. So they're going to have a really, really long road to go down if they want to be able to get into the competition.
Right. But that's like the nature. They probably knew, like, anybody going into Last Chance Kitchen, whether or not it's someone from the current season who just lost, or if it's one of these now these four returnees, they know the format, they know what they're getting into, they know it's going to be an uphill battle, and it's not a sure thing. So at least if they know what they're facing. So I don't feel too bad for them.
So Marcel was eliminated here in Last Chance Kitchen, but I did not know this when I got to see Marcel along with Antonia and the four judges as they held in Tom's Craft Restaurant their first ever live quickfire challenge, where the judges faced off against each other to win money for their charity. Although, spoiler alert, they all won money for their charity. But I'm intrigued to hear from someone. You know, I was very fortunate enough to be in the room, and I can definitely talk about my experiences there. But as someone who wasn't, Haley, just from viewing it as an event, how did you enjoy it?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I love when we get to see the personalities of the judges, because I think they're all so fun and awesome. And I love Padma. She's so great. And they were teamed up, which I was kind of surprised that I thought they'd all be individual. It was such a fun thing, and I hope they do this more. Like, if they did this at least once a season, that'd be great. I love Antonia. So seeing her host, I want her on my TV all the time.
Yeah, she was very, like, I would say her and Marcel were really interesting together, because Antonia was very calm and reserved, and Marcel, I had a lot of fun watching Marcel, because Marcel was doing like the gooberiest things. He was saying so many like trite catchphrases and really messing with Tom in particular, but you could tell he was really having fun. But Antonia definitely was like the more calming presence of the pair. But for those of you that didn't watch, which you still can on the Top Chef Facebook page if you want to check it out after we talk about this, the challenge is that the four judges were put into pairs. Each of them brought into the table, quite literally, one of their favorite holiday dishes. And their task was, okay, you're going to be in pairs. You have to sort of do a mashup of those two holiday dishes, or at least incorporate elements of those two holiday dishes into one cohesive dish. And in true quickfire fashion, halfway through, they bring out a little present. And that present is, an ISI machine to make some foam and chestnuts to incorporate into their dishes. At the end of the day, even though Tom had the technical home field advantage, again, they were at his restaurant, Padma and Graham end up taking it. They made like this really colorful salad. I actually ended up trying both dishes, and they were both incredible. Yeah, so this is part of, first of all, thank you to, you know, the Bravo team for giving me this opportunity. I get to be able to go. I got to hang out with friend of the podcast and writer for Us Weekly, Sharon Tharpe, as well. We got to basically watch the quick fire behind the scenes. We were sort of in the video village, so we got to stand right behind the big multi-camera screen and watch the director really work to sort of flash between these shots for the live event. Then afterwards, I got to sort of talk quickly with Tom had to take off, or maybe he was just very bitter at his loss and had to go take care of something else. But I got to talk with Padma and Gail and Graham, which if you had told me even a few months ago that I would have been able to do that, I would have slapped you where you stood. But it was truly like an incredible experience. And we also got to try the dishes that they made. And so while Graham and Padma made this salad that was really delicious, I was more a fan of what Gail and Tom did, which was sort of like an Italian Jewish wedding is how I like to describe it. It was a latke topped with like a salted cod. And that was just right down my alley. So even though they ended up losing at the end of the day, my heart was with them in spirit, but I got to try both of them and they were, especially they only had 25 minutes to cook. They were both so good.
Nice.
Yeah, so I won't, you know, go too much into what I talked with the judges about. You can read my parade article that I just posted yesterday about it. I talked with them about, you know, how they felt the culinary world has changed since Top Chef started and whether or not the show has influenced that. I talked with Gail, since I know she judges frequently on Top Chef Junior, about what it was like to experience, you know, kids cooking and whether or not they were taking themselves too seriously, about, you know, how Graham fit into the judges panel. So they were all super fun to talk to. They were absolutely lovely people. And I greatly enjoyed the experience I had getting to get some insight into how the literal sausage gets made during the live quick fire challenge.
That's great.
All right. So let's preview next week. Got a lot of things on deck here. First off, looks like we have our first sudden death quickfire of the season. Hilly, I forget if we got your opinions on the sudden death quickfire. Are you excited to see it happen next week?
I despise sudden death quickfires. I hate them so much.
More or less than the way LCK started this year?
Way more.
Why is that?
I don't love the idea of having like three pre-whatever. I can deal with it. It's fine. There's something about a sudden death quickfire that just drives me crazy. I just feel like that person just doesn't get the chance to really shine. And I know that, you know, it's part of the game and okay, whatever. But it just frustrates me to feel like their chance at this got cut short because maybe a tiny mistake they made in the 25 minutes they had with this very specific set of ingredients they probably have to use and this very weird specific brief that they had to, you know, stick to. It just doesn't feel super fair to me. And I know all's fair in love and reality television, but it just something about it. It just doesn't sit well with me.
Is that printed on the side of the Bachelor box? All is fair in love and reality television?
Yes.
No, I could definitely see your point. What I will say here is if we have to do a sudden death quickfire, I would much rather do it here when there are more chefs left than sort of what they did last year, for example, when Casey left and there were only six people left. I would rather have this happen. If you want to weed people out, I know they used to do in the past as well. If you come in last in this quick fire, you're automatically eliminated, which is sort of like the same thing. But if they have to do that, I'd rather have it be done with multiple or I'm more chefs left in the competition than fewer. But aside from that, we also get a food truck elimination challenge. Kurt, are you excited for the food trucks?
I'm always excited for food trucks. It's like there's weird laws about food trucks here in Chicago. Like, I don't think you can actually, like, you can use it to distribute and keep it warm, but you can't actually prepare the food from scratch in the food truck. That's I kind of miss living in LA. So I love a good good food truck. So that'll be a good time.
Yeah, and they're going to be, I guess, making it for, I don't know if it's like college students or adolescents, but the guest judges, I guess, for this challenge is a guy named Jake Paul, who I can talk more about next week, but he's just a little asshole. He's a little asshole, so we'll definitely talk more about him next week. We also get a Hosea appearance as well. We got it last week, but he'll be actually front and center next week. So there's going to be so much more to talk about as Top Chef keeps driving along, much like a food truck down a city block. For those of you out there who are not subscribed to our Top Chef only feed, please make sure you do that. And any ratings and reviews you give us would be greatly appreciated. That's what sort of is going to give us more visibility in the iTunes store, and especially when this new season is starting off, that is always key. You can all follow all of us on Twitter. Kurt is at Kurt Clark with two C's. Haley is at @HStrong_, and I'm at @MikeBloomType. Again, check out the article I wrote recapping my time behind the scenes at the Live Quickfire Challenge, as well as talking with Graham, Gail, and Padma. I also am doing exit interviews every week on Top Chef. I posted my Melissa exit interview on Monday, and shortly before recording this, posted my Claudette exit interview. So be sure to check all those out on Parade Magazine, along with all these Survivor exit interviews I do. And I might be doing something, a little Amazing Race surprise as well, early next week too. Also be sure to check all the other great stuff going on reality TV for Hap-Ups with The Taran Show. We've got, as the Survivor season comes to a close, we have the RHAP B&B and Why Blank Lost. I'll also be on the Survivor voicemails with Rob, too. But the temperature is lowering, but the heat is rising here on the Top Chef Judges Roundtable. Haley, Kurt, thank you so much for coming back again and, in one case, really bearing down when watching all of these dried tarantulas. We greatly appreciate it. What should we go for with the hashtag here?
Well, it shouldn't be whatever you do. Using the hashtag moist tarantula, do that. We should not do that. But in terms of what to actually suggest, I'm not sure. What about you, Mike?
I'm not. Haley, do you have any suggestions?
Oh God. No, I don't.
All right. Should we go with moist tarantula then?
Let's just do it.
Okay. We'll bear cave in and use that.
Yes, it's Chekhov's hashtag. We mentioned it, 30 minutes ago, and it finally comes to fruition. Thank you all so, so much for listening. We'll be back again next week talking through a jam-packed episode 3 of Top Chef. For now, take care. Bye-bye.